there was a really nice breakfast session yesterday that talked about TRIC, and it went over what are the sequelae of TRIC and what are some of the latest laboratory technologies available to diagnose TRIC, because I'm not going to go into that today. However, I just want to highlight that among reproductive age women, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and Trichomonas vaginalis are the most common non-viral STDs. And currently, their national guidelines recommend chlamydia screening of all sexually active women 25 years and younger, and GC screening for women at risk. There are no national guidelines for TRIC screening. And due to the fact that there's several bivalent diagnostic assays for chlamydia and gonorrhea, many women are tested for both infections. And I think this is where there's a little bit of a complication, where we have this vague women at risk for gonorrhea. And so I think many clinicians go, well, she must be at risk. And and there's a checkbox that you check and you get both tests. And so many women who are screened who have a very, very low prevalence of gonorrhea. And this can be it's a problem in many settings. Another change that is happening is that there's a nucleic acid amplification assay, or a NAT, for TRIC that might be FDA cleared by 2011. And this actually offers an opportunity for expanded TRIC screening. It offers an opportunity for a trivalent assay. I mean, many people think that it would be very handy. These are the three most common bacterial infections, so why shouldn't we take advantage and have a trivalent assay? So our objective was to examine whether a trivalent assay for TRIC, chlamydia, and gonorrhea would be a useful screening tool in the United States. Our methods included, we looked at women aged 15 to 39 years of age who participated in the National Health and Examination Survey, or NHANES, and this was cycles 2001 and 2004. And these women provided specimens for STD testing. And testing was done using NATs for both chlamydia and gonorrhea. And actually, a NAT was used for TRIC. It was a PCR, and that's different than what might become FDA cleared soon. And then we did weighted prevalence for each infection calculated by age and race ethnicity. So some of you are going, but wait, this is not new data. Why is this a late breaker? So the data were presented. there were publication of the data on TRIC and CID in 2007, as well as for chlamydia and gonorrhea. But I think one of the things that's really important, that we haven't taken the opportunity to look at these infections overlaid together. And recently, since the abstracts were the original deadline, we were charged with, we need to start thinking about TRIC. And so I thought, well, one of the first things we need to do is look at the epidemiology of these infections, because how their epidemiology is really important for how we think about screening. So this is my primary data side. So you can look at, this is the prevalence of TRIC, chlamydia, and gonorrhea amongst women by age group. And we have age group 15 to 19, so it's a 5-year group. And then the other groupings are 10 years. A little bit awkward, but the sample size is not sufficient to get really stable estimates if we did 5-year age groups all across. And so you can see that chlamydia in yellow is the most common infection, and the peak age is at 15 to 19 years of age, with a prevalence amongst the general population of women in the United States of 4.7%. And then it drops to 1.6% amongst women 30 to 39 years of age. And you can see that gonorrhea shows a similar age trend, where the prevalence is highest amongst the 15 to 19-year-olds, with a prevalence of 1.3% in 15 to 19-year-olds, and then dropping to 0.3% among women 30 to 39 years of age. In contrast, you can see TRIC looks really different. The prevalence is 2.1% amongst 15 to 19-year-olds. That's 2.3% among 20 to 29-year-olds, and leaps to 4.1% amongst the 30 to 39-year-olds. So this is where the prevalence is higher, and yet it's still really high amongst 40 to 49-year-olds of 3.7%. So the epidemiology of these infections are really, really different, and that has very strong, implications for screening. So I think I just also want to point out that Trichomonas vaginalis is different. It has the age distribution it almost looks more like a viral STD. If you think about what's the age distribution for herpes, the peak is in the 30 to 40 year age. And you know, it looks totally different than other bacterial STDs such as chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. However, herpes does peak at like 30% and you know, so it doesn't have the same steep increase. So this suggests that there's a lot about the sexual transmission as well as the natural history of the infection that we don't understand. And something that was described in the session yesterday was also that there's a huge disparity in the prevalence of TRIC amongst women by race, ethnicity. And so here we are looking at sort of the two most extreme age groups, the 15 to 19 year olds in red and the 30 to 39 year olds in yellow. And so overall, just to kind of reiterate, the prevalence in the general population of women who are 15 to 19 year olds is 2.1% compared to 4.1% amongst older women. You can look amongst blacks, the prevalence is 9.8% in young women, and it's 16.7% amongst women who are 30 to 39 years of age. In comparison, amongst 15 to 19-year-old Hispanic women, the prevalence is about 1%, and it's similar amongst whites at 0.8%. And amongst 30 to 39-year-olds, the prevalence is 5.9% in Hispanics and 1.5% amongst white. So there's a tenfold greater prevalence of TRIC amongst African Americans than whites, and I think this is something we really need to understand and address. So in summary or conclusion, the age prevalent trends were similar for chlamydia and gonorrhea. The women 15 to 19 year olds had the highest prevalence. In contrast, the age prevalence trends were the inverse for TRIC, with women having the highest prevalence at 30 to 39 years of age, and yet it was still high amongst the 40 to 49 year olds. And so I think based on this epidemiology, it doesn't favor the use of a trivalent assay in the general population of women in the United States. So let's have some discussion. If there was a trivalent assay, if we did the targeting that just targeted younger women, the target population for chlamydia screening, we would miss most TRIC infections. If a trivalent assay was targeted for women at the greatest risk for TRIC, the 30 to 39 year olds, it would result in a substantial overscreening for chlamydia and gonorrhea. So why care if there's overscreening? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is the cost. So CMS, or the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, set standard fee schedules for laboratory test reimbursement. And this is the fee schedule that's used for all women who are or all people who are tested through Medicaid. It's also what is used for other programs that are run by states, such as Family Pact in California. And so the 2009 fee schedule for chlamydia and gonorrhea NAT is $51 per analyte. And so that means for a dual chlamydia and gonorrhea test, the reimbursement is $102. If there was a trivalent assay, it would be that included TRIC, it would be $153. And I also want to state that private insurance often reimburses at an even higher level than what is reimbursed through the CMS standards. So some other things to consider. So public health laboratory costs for a dual NAT runs about $20. So I've had colleagues in San Francisco, Chicago, and Cincinnati say, well, they can do the test for $20 or less. So that's one-fifth of the CMS reimbursement rate. And that has huge implications about what is cost-effective. So chlamydia screening cost-effectiveness studies have found screening cost-effective usually when the chlamydia test costs less than $20. And so the bulk of screening in the United States is supported by Medicaid and private insurance at a cost that's substantially greater than what is cost-effective. So I think I want to really highlight that all of us pay for the high cost of screening through taxes and increasing our health insurance premiums. And I think before we expand TRIC screening, we must consider costs. So why else should we care about overscreening? And I think the other reason is the positive predictive value. Due to the low prevalence of each infection in some subpopulations, the positive predictive value of results for a given infection might be substantially compromised with a trivalent assay. So let's give an example. So the observed prevalence of gonorrhea amongst women in the general population who are 30 to 39 years of age is 0.3%. If a test is 99.8% specific, which is a fantastic, wonderful test, you will automatically observe a 0.2% positive test, and all of these are false positives. And thus, it's possible that two-thirds of tests in this population of older women could be false positive if they were being routinely tested with a trivalent assay. So I do think there are some possible applications for a trivalent assay in the United States in populations with a high prevalence of infection. STD clinics may be a great location, and there's an STD program director who is in this audience who was telling me this week it would be so wonderful to have a trivalent assay. But I think the question remains, how many categorical STD clinics will there be in the future? And jails would also be another fabulous place to use a trivalent assay. It's a population that will have a high, very high prevalence of all infections, probably up to close to age 40 or so. And there's hundreds of thousands of people who are incarcerated, but currently we don't have the resources to screen these populations. And there's also some communities with very high prevalence of disease, such as in Baltimore. But the question is, and this is something the manufacturer will have to decide, are these settings adequate to support a trivalent assay? So what are some next steps? I think in general there needs to be more research to clarify the sexual transmission, natural history, and treatment for TRIC. And I think we need to model cost effectiveness for TRIC screening, and Kwame is actually going to be doing this this year. And then I think one thing that we need to do regardless is we need to work to renegotiate fee schedules for STI NATs. It's just too many resources are being expended for these tests than they could be done for, 20% of the cost. And I think that's important to think about for both chlamydia and gonorrhea. So thank you. So. So, are there any questions or comments? Ron?
Sorry, I'm sure you knew this was coming. As somebody who is involved in the development of trivalent assay, but a rapid test, which is going to be considerably less expensive than the NAT, what would your reaction be to that? Do you still need? Did we still not need an assay in the United States based on the epidemiology and the positive predictive value, etc.? Because obviously the cost becomes less of a problem.
Well, I guess part of my question is how specific is that assay going to be? Because generally, rapid tests are somewhat less sensitive and less specific. And if you're doing a rapid test that's less specific in a population of women who are 30 to 39 years of age, and you're going to be getting a lot of false positives for gonorrhea and even possibly for chlamydia. And so I think the positive predictive value still is a really important question. I mean, clearly the women at greatest risk for a TRIC are not the women who have chlamydia and gonorrhea, and it's just the epidemiology makes it very challenging. And I just think you really would have to think about the positive predictive value in that case.
Sorry, but the positive predictive value is largely a measure of specificity, and these tests, the rapid tests, tend to be very specific.
So the observed prevalence is 0.3% in 30 to 39-year-old women. So, and what you're going to observe is in your positive, automatic with a test that's 99.8% specific, 0.2% of your tests are going to be positive. So probably your rapid test is it going to be better than 99.5% specific? Because that's excellent. That would be, but 0.5% of your tests would be positive, and all of them would be false positive at that. So, yeah, so I think that's where my biggest concern would be is giving, women, telling them they have gonorrhea when they probably don't. Other questions? Last one, so Peter.
So, not to confuse costs with charges, because and it's really about the setting in which it gets you. Predictive value is going to be a problem. You want to use the right test in the right situation for your screening so that it is, you aren't
Well, I mean, Peter makes a good point, is there's a difference between cost and reimbursement. However, most testing is not done in a public health setting with public health laboratory costs. The reimbursement is what's done in the private sector and what's done through on the CMS. And we're expecting that Medicaid is going to be expanded. And then it's going to be that the costs will be even more extraordinary and a greater burden on our health system. So I think we can't really take out the reimbursement. It's really part of what is happening and the burden of expense in our health system right now. Sorry. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.